rinnenchi. Come avrò noia, avrò triste vino, lo dico d'un esco morino, lo dico d'un esco morino.
And from Lviv, Ukraine, that was the Lemko Bluegrass Band and Dunaj. Dobrý večer, šanovní radioslucháči, te vítaju vás všich na radioperedaču Náš holos Radio Krajinského Koriňa, ktorá podiečí vám, jak zvyčajno, što subote o 6. hodení na bahatomovní radiostancii AM1320 CHMB u místí Vancouveri. Pri mikrofoni Pavlina Makuori ďakujú, što vy boli slucháčami sjohodní večeri, tady šole perebute zi mnoju nastupnú hodenu. Hello there and welcome to Náš holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. Here on AM1320 CHMB Vancouver. I'm Pavlina Demchuk-Macquarie, and I am delighted to have you with me. We've got a great program lined up for you, and this is a program a little bit different. There won't be a news feature, not a current news feature. I'm actually, as you're listening to this, I will be on my way to Ukraine. So we've got some timeless stories, or not so time-sensitive stories, and we'll be bringing you them courtesy Ukraine Today. As well, we've got Ukrainian Jewish heritage, and this is a story about the Golden Rose, and this is a treasure in Lviv, Ukraine, that is the Jewish community is trying very hard to preserve. So stay tuned for that. As well, we've got our usual proverb of the week, other items of interest, and great Ukrainian music. And coming up next, from Edmonton, Trubka, and this is from their CD that they recorded in the 1990s, I think. It is called Pochatke, Beginnings, and here they are now with the Bard's words to music, Dume Moi, My Thoughts.
Oh, Thanks to the foresight and generosity of its donors, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been investing in the future of the Ukrainian-Canadian community for over 50 years. Since 1963, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been funding initiatives that strengthen our Ukrainian-Canadian identity and enhance our Ukrainian-Canadian cultural heritage. These include fine and performing arts and arts groups, museums, cultural centers, education, as well as authors, journalists, and the Ukrainian-Canadian media, including this program. The foundation strives to become the premier not-for-profit foundation in a Canada which acknowledges the Ukrainian-Canadian community as a fundamental component of Canadian society. Nash Hollis listeners are encouraged to support this vision through continued donations into the future. To apply for grants, make a donation, or for more information, visit ShevchenkoFoundation.com.
Hi, I'm Vincent Rees from Edmonton's Cobblestone Freeway Cultural Tours with exciting news. Our 2015 tours are up and ready to go. Join us for a unique cultural tour. We have trips to Eastern Europe, including Western Ukraine, Hungary, and Croatia. Plus, we're going to Costa Rica, Brazil, and Argentina. So visit our website for photos and details. Cobblestone Freeway, we're in Edmonton and ready to go. So book today. Visit cobblestonefreeway.ca.
Золотий ювілей української культури в Паркланд околиці. Канадський національний український фестиваль «Вдофін Манітоба» відбудеться від 31 липня по 2 серпня. Святкуйте 50 неймовірних років української культури з музикою і танцями гуртів з усієї Канади та України. Якщо ви ніколи не були в фестивалі або не були тут роками, прошу розгляньте це запрошення. За квитками контактуйтеся по телефону 1-877-474-2683 або по інтернету cnuf.ca. Ласкаво просимо.
The third annual Babas and Borscht Ukrainian Festival takes place August 22nd and 23rd in Andrew, Alberta, featuring great Ukrainian food, music, and dance. Free admission, including a free borscht sample. Saturday evening's a baba with a banquet and entertainers from Edmonton, including the Shumka dancers and two fabulous music ensembles. At Babas and Borscht Festival, August 22nd and 23rd in Andrew, Alberta. For all things baba, all things borscht, and your zabava tickets, go to babasandborscht.ca.
We want you there! You're coming, right?
А друга заплаче, бо я її сват. А третя заплаче, бо плакати мусить, бо вона од мене дитько носить. А третя заплаче, бо плакати мусить, бо вона од мене дитько
From Winnipeg, that was Zrada and Kidme Preshle Karta, which translates as I received the letter. And the letter in this case refers to a conscription notice. And it harkens back to World War I era when part of Ukraine was governed by the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Conscription, of course, is often a reality when a country is at war. In Ukraine today, that is certainly the case. However, most Ukrainians who are fighting at the front have been going there voluntarily, and this includes people from all walks of life. Up next is Haidamake, with a traditional Ukrainian folk song also referring to wartime. It's called Yichal Kozak. На війноньку козак goes off to war.
Їхав козак на війноньку, прощай, сказав дівчинонько, прощай, дівчино, чорнобривонько, їду в чужую сторононьку. Прощай, дівчино, чорнобривонько, їду в чужую сторононьку. Дай же, дівчино, пустину, може, у бою загину. Темної ночі закриють очі, легше в могилі спочину. Темної ночі закриють очі, легше в могилі спочину. Дівчина пустину, козак у бою загину. Темної ночі закрили очі, вже він в могилі спочину. Темної ночі закрили очі, вже він в могилі спочину.
Ukrainian Jewish Heritage, hosted by Renata Hananets in cooperation with the Jewish Heritage Museum in Lviv, Ukraine. This special Nash Holos feature is brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative based in Toronto, Ontario.
Ukraine's Jewish community is fighting to restore a historical treasure in the heart of Lviv. This treasure is the Golden Rose, also known as Turei Zahav, an UNESCO World Heritage Site. The Golden Rose is the oldest synagogue in Ukraine. It is also renowned as one of the oldest and most beautiful synagogues in all of Europe. The synagogue was built in 1582, and it was one of the most spectacular Renaissance architectural landmarks of the city. Initially, it was built as a private synagogue for Yitzhak Nachmanovich. He was a senior of the Jewish assembly in Lviv and one of the city's wealthiest residents. In 1603, the Polish king granted the lands on which his synagogue stood to the Roman Catholic Church. The church wanted it as a monastery for the Jesuits. But in 1609, the synagogue was returned to the Jewish community upon payment of a ransom of 20,000 guilders. Legend has it that the synagogue was saved by a woman, the daughter-in-law of its founder, Yitzhak Nachmanovich. The woman's name was Rosa. She was known in the community as the Golden Rose because she was very kind. Rosa saw and felt her people's pain, so she offered her entire fortune to the Roman Catholic Church as ransom for the synagogue. However, church authorities would not hear of it. "Let her bring the money herself," was the bishop's final word. A woman of great beauty and charm, Rosa understood what this meant. In addition to her fortune, she would have to sacrifice her virtue. Rosa did as the bishop requested. She personally delivered the money to him and remained in his residence. In return, the bishop released the synagogue to her brothers. The community was overjoyed. Once again, light shone from the windows of the great and glorious synagogue. It could be seen all the way to the bishop's residence. Rosa saw the lights too. Satisfied that her mission was fulfilled, she committed suicide. From 1654 to 67, the Jewish scholar Rabbi David Halevi Segal prayed in this synagogue. He was known for his writings of Judaic religious law, in particular the famous Torah Zahav. Because of the importance of this writing, the synagogue also became known as Torah Zahav, which means the golden lines. Over the generations, Rabbi Segal's descendants have produced 33 rabbis, yet the significance of this great legacy remains lost on the world. Like many other Jewish sacred sites in Ukraine, Rabbi Segal's grave has been desecrated. Instead of a monument or headstone, a market now stands on his gravesite. For centuries, the Golden Rose Synagogue was a hub of Jewish culture and learning in Lviv. But World War II brought the destruction of the Golden Rose Synagogue, along with most of Ukraine's Jews. In 1941, the Golden Rose was completely looted. Later, the Nazi demolished it with explosives. All that survives is part of the structure's northern wall. It bears a plaque written in English, Hebrew, and Ukrainian. During the Soviet period, the building lay in ruins. In the late 1980s, the municipal authorities carried out some conservation work. In the 1990s, architectural historian Sergei Kravtsov created a computer simulation showing the synagogue at all stages of its history, revealing the grandeur of this nearly lost historical treasure. Since 1991, Ukraine passed laws to preserve historic sites, and in 1998, the United Nations designated the Golden Rose as a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Unfortunately, neither provided the Golden Rose with adequate protection. In 2011, authorities in Lviv granted a private developer permission to demolish remnants of the synagogue in order to build a hotel for the European Football Championship Cup. This brought international pressure as well as pressure from the president's office in Kyiv. As a result, city authorities called a stop to the hotel work. Also, the mayor of Lviv suddenly announced that the city would proceed with long-delayed plans to build a Holocaust monument near the Golden Rose Synagogue. There is also, finally, a program of the regeneration of the Jewish quarter in Lviv. The program is grounded on rigorous archaeological, historical, and architectural research conducted by Ukrainian scientists. They recommend a gradual restoration of the Golden Rose Synagogue to its original state, as it was in the 16th century. But the first priority is, of course, the preservation of the existing ruins. This is Renata Ganinets at the Faina Petrikova Center in Lviv, Ukraine. Until next time, shalom.
Thank you, Renata. Щиро дякую. Join us again next week for another episode of Ukrainian Jewish Heritage here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative.
Твоїй і моїй, дайте волю пілоту.
was Ukrainian folk singer Serhiy Fayfura with a song, an original composition called Dajte Volyu Nadiyi, which means Free Nadia Savchenko. And Nadia Savchenko, of course, being the celebrated, iconic now Ukrainian fighter pilot and member of parliament who was kidnapped by Russian terrorists, smuggled across the border to Russia, and where she languishes now in a Russian jail, quite often on a hunger strike. And she is determined that her spirit will not be broken. Serhiy Fayfura and Dajte Volyu Nadiyi. Ви слухаєте українську радіопродачу «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння, котра подається вам на багатомовній радіостанції АМ 1320 у місті Ванкувері. You're listening to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver. Up next, Anatoly Rudenko and the Folklore Ensemble Kyiv with an old patriotic song about boys going off to war. And the title of the song, Nalivaymo Bratya, means, Let's Drink, Brothers. Now the latest news stories from Ukraine, courtesy Ukraine's first international English news channel, Ukraine Today.
Ukraine Today is joined by the Minister of Finance of Ukraine, Mrs. Natalia Yuresko. Madam Minister, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Madam Minister, you have been appointed as Minister of Finance of Ukraine in December, and before that, for many years, you worked in a corporate sector. Moreover, you were working in corporate finance, where things are moving very fast, very quickly. Decisions very often are being decided on the spot. So now with your transition to the bureaucratic world of the Ukrainian government, what are your impressions?
Interesting comparison. I was in the private equity world where actually decision making takes quite a bit longer. Deals take over a year sometimes to go from beginning to end, unlike, let's say, in investment banking, which is quick. And you live with those deals and you live with your decisions for a long time. That's actually very similar to the type of work that I'm doing today. Sometimes decisions take long. Sometimes they're complicated because you need to bring in all the different stakeholders and all the different perspectives. We're a participatory democracy, so we need to convince our coalition partners of the importance of a reform or of a change. But then you also have to live with the effect of whatever change you make. And so I actually see more common elements to the type of work that I was doing and what I'm doing today, with the exception that, of course, Ukraine is the most important potential project that could exist in a person's life.
We were talking to Mr. Shemkiv a couple of months ago, and he said that half of the employees in the presidential administration never use an email. When you came to the Ministry of Finance, what were your impressions? What were your...
That part of it is true. There is the procedural side of it is very, very complex and very out of date. I am a major user of email, and that's true. The ministry is not very big on email. In fact, we're just now moving towards being able to use e-signatures, just now trying to implement the procedures to be able to have e-governance, e-documentation, but we're not there yet. So everything is still physically on paper. You sign a lot of this, pieces of paper, but I think the real issue is that authority is not delegated downward. So in my previous company, for example, there were department heads or there were people who had responsibilities where they got to take the decisions themselves. They had responsibility and authority, and then if they did something where they were uncertain of what they should do, they would come and ask somebody above them. Or if they made a series of mistakes over time, they'd be removed from office. Here, decision-making doesn't necessarily work that way. It comes all the way to the top all the time. Even decisions that theoretically in another organization, in another government, you might think might be taken at a lower level, everything comes up to the very top here. And you spend a lot of time, as you've heard from previous ministers, signing pieces of paper and decisions, whereas only a portion of them are really strategic, where you'd think that they'd come up, bubble up to the level of a minister. My first priority was to come in and get a budget completed within weeks in December, so that the country would be able to pay pensions, pay social payments on January 1st without a beat being missing. And then second was to reach agreement with the IMF, because we needed that stabilization package. The country's reserves were down to less than 2 months of critical imports. So negotiating that IMF agreement, which involved a series of what are called prior conditions, adapting the budget, further additional reforms, it all had to be done before that loan could be approved. Now I'm in the process of the next stage of this stabilization, and that's debt restructuring. And my priorities have been, frankly speaking, not so much internal, although I do work on certain reforms in the ministry, but really very much the stabilization of the financial and banking system in the country.
Currently, the country is in a very difficult economic condition. How will this loan, this additional loan, impact the lives of ordinary citizens?
Well, first and foremost, I think, again, we were at a very difficult stage in January of this year, before January and February of this year, before we got the first tranche of that loan. As I said, 2 months critical imports. If you can imagine, if you continue to work down that level of reserves, you get to the point where you can't import. And if you want to talk about average citizen, what does it mean not to be able to import? It means no medicines. It means no gas for heating. Without hard currency, without reserves, the country can't function. So first and foremost, that's very, very important, is to build up that reserve.
With war raging in eastern Ukraine, I know Ukrainian government is not calling this officially a war, but de facto it is a war. How difficult it is for you to negotiate with international lenders, with foreign banks, lending money to Ukraine? How confident are they that Ukraine will be able to repay this money?
Well, I'm not negotiating for new loans with foreign banks. We're not negotiating with the private sector, and that's one of the reasons. Ukraine does not have, for a variety of reasons, not so much the war, but also just its financial capacity, the ability to borrow in the private markets right now. And where we're borrowing from are the international financial institutions, our bilateral partners, who, knowing there's a war, knowing that this is a temporary financial weakness, and knowing and believing in the reform program of this government, this president, this coalition, and this parliament, believe that we will come through this financial difficulty, having taken the right decisions that haven't perhaps been taken fast enough in the past or haven't been done in the past at all. And so they're trusting that this government is going to make the changes that will give us economic health to return to the country and make us a better borrower going forward. But that is only possible with our bilateral and multilateral partners, who have a strategic policy sense. They're not purely commercial entities.
Now that you mentioned the reforms, there is a lot of criticism both from the Ukrainian people and from Ukraine's Western partners that the declared reforms, that the reforms which were declared by the government almost a year ago, are moving at a very slow pace. And the war is not a good excuse for moving with these reforms at this, such a slow pace.
Now, the war is the reason to accelerate the reforms to the maximum, but I'll disagree with your statement because we have never had more support for the reforms that we've actually implemented, not documented, but implemented than we have today. I believe we have greater support. I think the recent International Conference for Support of Ukraine was a perfect example where we had over 85 delegations, over 50 countries, and the support that we've received is only possible. The $7.5 billion that we've received, aside from the IMF, from the G7, from the EU, from the United States, from the World Bank, from the EBRD, is only possible because they do believe the reforms are happening at a pace that, if you read some of the recent interviews, the president of the EBRD says he's never seen it move this fast in 23 years. I think that the issue with the population not seeing the reforms is that there seems to be perhaps sometimes a difference of opinion as to what is a reform. I mean, many people unfortunately believe that reforms mean tomorrow that their incomes will increase. That's not the definition of a reform. The hard reforms, the structural reforms, the things we need to change the nature of our society, anti-corruption, energy subsidy reduction, the deregulation to make life and business easier for doing business in Ukraine, those changes you don't see in your paycheck or your pension tomorrow. But the reform that we've done just over the past year, for example, in reducing the state oil and gas monopoly, Naftogaz deficit, last year 110 billion hryvnia, more than $10 billion. This year, 29.7, $1.5 billion. That difference doesn't make a difference to the average citizen's paycheck today. He doesn't see it. But the difference is we were financing that, and that deficit last year was a huge source of inflation. And as we reduce the deficit, both there and in the state budget, inflation is reduced. Inflation eats up fixed incomes. It eats up people's pensions. And if we can control inflation, if we can reduce the sources of inflation over time, that's better for the average citizen. Those reforms, though, take time to feel for the average citizen. Some of the things that they'll feel right away, I think, and are critical, and that people will start to have a different sense of whether it's working, not working quickly enough, are, for example, the traffic police changing. Is that more or less important than the fact that we eliminated intermediaries in gas trade? No more middlemen stealing hundreds of millions of dollars in our trade when we buy gas, either from Gazprom in Russia or from Europeans. We now buy two-thirds of our gas from Europe. Again, both of those reforms are extremely important, but does the average citizen feel the elimination of intermediaries, the stopping of siphoning of hundreds of millions of dollars? He doesn't feel it, but it happened. It happened last year. It's not my government. It's the minister before me, in fact, post-revolution, but certainly not me. I can't take any credit. It's a matter of what you're waiting to feel. And I think that's the difference right now why the international community is very supportive of the reforms and feels and sees them, because they have a broader perspective. And because they're not, unfortunately, in the situation that the average citizen is, where they're tired. They've been through a terrible revolution. They've been through the illegal annexation of Crimea, and now a horrendous war that has human costs, territorial costs, financial costs, economic costs. Ukrainian people want to see that what they're fighting for, this European choice, it started with the European choice and it's still the European choice on the eastern border now, that has a real change in their lives. That is going to take time. The next big thing I hope they'll see is that we can return, hopefully, to economic growth next year and stop being in a recession.
Can we talk a little bit about the cost of the war, which you mentioned? As from your perspective as finance minister, how much does Ukraine pay for 1 month or 1 day of having war in eastern Ukraine?
I don't know. I haven't thought about it. I mean, we've gone back and forth in dollar terms. You know, it used to be about $10 million. We've had a devaluation of the currency, so now people say $5 to $7 million per day. But frankly speaking, again, you go back, it's 5% of GDP that we've put into the budget this year for our national defense and law enforcement. So that's the largest sum ever dedicated in Ukrainian independent history to its national security.
When you came to the Ukrainian government, if I might say so, you were total outsider to the Ukrainian to the government, to the bureaucracy of the government. How difficult it is for you to navigate through the murky waters and of Ukrainian corrupt government?
Well, I don't have corrupt government around me. If I see corruption, I call it, and people don't show it to me if they're not exhibiting it. I have a very clear policy. I don't participate in corruption. I never did. Doing business in Ukraine, I was able to avoid it. I try to maintain a set of standards. I try and insist on those same standards here. A big part of the reforms that we're doing, again, are the elimination of that. So we're eliminating tax privileges that went to individual industries. Someone may have received something for those tax privileges in the past, but you know, nobody's offering the Ministry of Finance any kind of bribes in order to eliminate them. So I think it's a very different situation, and I don't find myself faced with those kinds of everyday decisions. Again, the Ministry of Finance is unique. Other than the budget process, we don't have licenses that we're giving out to people. We don't have things where you have that kind of daily effect that you have in other parts of government, in the local government, and registration in different areas. So
the appointment of foreign citizens, and I know you once you've been appointed, you're CEO, you're granted by Ukraine. The Ukrainian citizenship by the president, but the appointment of foreign citizens in the Ukrainian government is unprecedented. What convinced you to accept this challenge? And I think this is a big challenge.
I agree with you, and I never actually considered that foreign citizens would be suggested in this period of time. So I never expected to be invited. The way the invitation occurred was very unexpected. So I had a recruiter in my office that had been hired by the President's administration to look for highly qualified candidates to come into government. And we were talking about other Ukrainians that I knew that I thought might be well placed to serve in the Ukrainian government. People I thought were very professional, very moral, with very high ethical standards that I knew from business and from my time in living in Ukraine the past 23 years. Towards the end of the conversation, the recruiter asked whether or not I would consider if a proposal was made, and I laughed and I said, well, that proposal hasn't been made and won't be made because I'm a foreigner. And they said, well, what if it was made? And I said, well, it just doesn't matter because it has. And we went back and forth. And that weekend, the president's administration called me and said, would you consider? And that's when I had to start seriously thinking. When the proposal was made, first of all, it's a complete honor and a privilege to serve Ukraine. But it is also part of the life I've been living for 23 years. And in one way or another, I believe I've been serving Ukraine for 23 years. And now, more than ever, I thought if there was something I could do that would bring marginal added value to Ukraine at this very difficult time, that I had a responsibility to try and do it. There are people who give their lives at the front every day for Ukraine. And I wasn't being asked to go to the front. Luckily, I'd be of no assistance at the front, frankly. But I was being asked to do what I could and to add my value, where I hopefully will have value, to add to Ukraine at a very difficult time. So it was, again, an honor and a privilege, a complete surprise, but an honor and a privilege. And I hope that I can serve and accomplish something.
Well, let's hope for that, and we wish you best of luck in that capacity. This was Volodymyr Suluhu for Ukraine Today, together with the Finance Minister of Ukraine, Mrs. Natalia Iresko. Thank you.
And with that, we've come to the end of this week's Ukraine News Roundup. For more breaking stories on Ukraine, follow Ukraine Today on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and their live blog at uatoday.tv.
Thank you.
here's what's coming up this week in Vancouver's Ukrainian community. On Wednesdays, catch Nash Holos, Ukrainian Roots Radio, broadcasting live from Nanaimo to North and Central Vancouver Island, the Gulf Islands, the Sunshine Coast, Northwest Washington State, and in the Greater Vancouver listening area. Wednesdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pacific Time on CHLY Radio Malaspina, 101.7 FM on the radio dial, and streaming online at chly.ca. Nash Holos now airs in international syndication on the PCJ Radio Network, broadcasting weekly on AM, FM, and shortwave radio to over 20 countries. Information and podcast links on PCJ Radio at www.pcjmedia.com. On Friday, enjoy a pierogi supper at St. Mary's Ukrainian Orthodox Center, 13512 108th Avenue, just off King George Boulevard in Surrey. Doors are open from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. For more information, call 604-531-1923 or visit their website, www.uocstmarysurrey.com. Channel 8 Omni airs two Ukrainian language TV shows in the Vancouver viewing area. Kontakt TV Sundays at 7 a.m. with repeats Tuesdays at 9 a.m. and Thursdays at 7 a.m. and Forum TV Sundays at 8 a.m. with repeats on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. and Thursdays at 12 noon. And at 6 p.m. on Saturday evenings, flip your radio dial right back here to AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver or catch the live stream at am1320.com. And join me for another hour of fun on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. In between broadcasts, make sure to follow Nash Holos and me on Facebook and Twitter. And for audio archives, transcripts, podcast feeds, and more, visit our website at www.nashholos.com. the very best in Ukrainian programming, tune in to Nasholas Ukrainian Roots Radio at 6 p.m. Saturdays here on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver and streaming online at am1320.com. Live in Nanaimo, Wednesdays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on 101.7 FM or streaming at chly.ca. And our new international edition airs in over 20 countries on AM, FM, and shortwave radio on the PCJ Radio Network. In between broadcasts, you can find us online at www.nasholas.com. Among other things, you'll find the links there to all three podcasts. As well, make sure to follow us on Twitter and please like us on and please like the Nasholas Facebook page. Нажами вже скінчили нашу програму. Пора нам прощатися на ще один тиждень. Але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Хто горілкою журбу заливає, той не журбу, а себе вбиває. And our proverb of the week translates as, whoever drowns his sorrows in drink drowns not his sorrows but himself. Well, that about wraps it up for another edition of Nasholas Ukrainian Roots Radio here on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver. To take us to the end of our show, we've got Prairie Crocus from Winnipeg from their CD Back Up and Push and the Songbird Polka. I'm Pavlina on behalf of all of us here at Nasholas and AM 1320. Thanks for listening and Dobranich!